Welcome, curious minds, to another deep dive. Have you ever paused to consider what truly propels a small community forward? You know, transforming it from just a quiet crossroads into a vibrant, full-service municipality.
It's a fascinating process.
It really is. And today, we're embarking on a journey like that right to the heart of Oklahoma, to a place called the town of Johnson.
Yeah, Johnson is a compelling case study. It's a community really poised for some significant evolution, you could say.
So our mission in this deep dive...
I think we need to dissect the blueprint for that transformation. We'll be examining their fiscal health, looking at their unique historical journey, and there's this really ambitious proposal that could fundamentally redefine their future.
That's right, and we've got a rich collection of sources here. I mean, really detailed stuff. Annual financial surveys going back over a decade, official certifications, and this comprehensive executive summary outlining their growth strategy.
A good stack of material to work with.
Definitely. We're going to unpack exactly what these documents tell us about Johnson's past, its current standing, and yeah, its exciting potential for the future. So as we look at this stack, what immediately grabs your attention? What's the first thing that jumps out about the town of Johnson?
Well, maybe we should start with the basics. Just where is Johnson?
Okay, yeah, let's ground ourselves. Where exactly is the town of Johnson and what's its foundational story?
Geographically, we're looking at a pretty compact area. It's 4.48 square miles, situated at an elevation of 1,043 feet. And it's in Pottawatomie County, Oklahoma.
Okay.
But what's really fascinating here, I think, is its historical context. It effectively opened its doors, so to speak, during the Sac and Fox land run of 1891.
Wow, the land run. That's pivotal Oklahoma history right there.
Absolutely. A moment where former Native American lands were open for non-Native settlement, literally creating towns overnight. So Johnson started as an early agrarian community, farms, basically.
So it began as this agricultural crossroads. How did that evolve into the formally recognized town of Johnson? What was the catalyst for that?
Well, for a long time, it just remained an unincorporated crossroads.
Yeah.
Probably a quiet agricultural hub, you know, residents focused on farming. Until a really key moment on May 11th, 1982.
Okay, what happened then?
The community officially incorporated.
Okay.
And the reason? To secure zoning control. And specifically, to resist proposed landfill.
Ah, so it was defensive, a reaction.
Exactly. But this act of incorporation, it really speaks volumes about their early proactive spirit. They didn't just let things happen to them, they took action.
And looking at its demographics, that proactive spirit seems to have laid the groundwork for some significant recent growth, hasn't it?
Absolutely. The population figures really illustrate this as like a slow burn, then this rapid acceleration.
How slow?
Okay, so 196 residents in 1990, growing, but slowly, to 223 by 2000 and then 247 by 2010. Steady but small numbers. But then, between 2010 and 2020, something truly remarkable occurred. The population almost doubled. It jumped to 457.
Wow, 457 from 247.
Yeah, that's an 85% increase.
In just one decade.
In a single decade. It's huge. And it makes you wonder, you know, how has this kind of explosive growth impacted their financial operations? Especially for a town that started so small and stayed small for so long.
Okay, let's turn to the financial documents then. Because this is often where the true story of a community's health and its potential really comes to light. Mm-hmm. We have these annual financial survey forms, Form 2644, the standard reporting for places this size in Oklahoma stretching from 2012 to 2015. And then we have certifications for the more recent years, 2021 through 2024. What do these figures reveal about Johnson's financial footing?
Well, the financial overview reveals a lean operation. I mean, really lean, but also incredibly prudent.
How lean?
Get this. Across the years 2012 through 2015, the town of Johnson reported $0. $0 in total tax revenue.
Wait, zero. No local taxes at all?
None. Which means their revenue base, their entire income stream for those years, was state shared funds.
Zero local tax revenue for years. That's almost unheard of for a growing community. How exactly did they manage to operate them? What were their primary sources of income?
That's a sharp observation, yeah. Their main inflows were indeed intergovernmental revenues. Mostly from things like state gas taxes and vehicle fees that get shared back.
Okay.
So in 2012, this was about $2,123. It fluctuated quite a bit down to $447.28 in 2013, then back up to $400 and $480 in 2014, and about $461 in 2015. Tiny amounts, really.
Really small.
They also had some minor other operating revenues like $727, $57 in 2013, and $700, $711 in 2015, but still very small overall.
Given those incredibly lean revenues, I have to ask, were they constantly struggling to keep up, or did their spending habits surprise you?
That's the interesting part. The records show this consistent pattern of extreme fiscal prudence. Their total expenditures generally trailed their revenues. They spent less than they took in, even when they took in very little.
So they were saving money, even on that tight budget.
Exactly. For example, in 2012, expenditures were just $200, mostly for salaries and wages, presumably part-time town staff.
$200 for the year.
For the whole year. Then expenditures rose to $524 in 2013, and about the same. $524 in 2014. Then they dropped way down again to just $100 in 2015.
Wow.
So what's truly insightful here isn't just that they saved money. It's that this almost ascetic fiscal discipline, operating on fumes for years, actually positioned them perfectly for this ambitious leap they're considering now.
Right. It shows long-term thinking, even at that micro-municipal level.
It really does. It's a testament to that vision.
It sounds like incredible fiscal discipline, and I assume that shows up in their accumulated assets.
Indeed it does. Their end-of-year assets clearly reflect this slow accumulation. They had $36,540 in 2012. It dips slightly the next year to about $25,892, then $26,961 in 2014. But then it increased significantly, up to $42,241 by the end of 2015.
So they built a solid financial foundation just by being careful.
Exactly. Careful management over time.
And we also see something called certification in lieu of audit for the more recent years, 2021 through 2024. What does that signify for us about their financial situation? Is that just paperwork?
No, that's actually a key detail. This certification in lieu of audit isn't just bureaucratic jargon. It's a specific legal provision for smaller municipalities in Oklahoma. It allows them to bypass a full, often expensive, audit if their revenues are below a certain threshold.
Which is?
In this case, $25,000 a year. So by filing this certification, they're essentially confirming year after year that they've been operating on that very lean, highly constrained budget, still relying primarily on those state-shared funds, not generating much local revenue.
Okay, so if they've been operating on such a tight budget, consistently below that audit threshold for years, how does this financial foundation, or maybe we should call it this limitation, how does that shape their ambition to evolve into a full-service municipality? What does that transition actually look like?
Yeah, we connect this to the bigger picture. The analysis highlights some really clear implications. Their current revenue base, being entirely state-shared, means they completely lack local tax streams. No property taxes, no sales taxes.
Which are the bread and butter for most towns.
Exactly. And this fundamentally limits their capacity for expanded services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to become a full-service municipality, that means moving beyond just basic road maintenance or maybe minimal public safety. It means offering parks, local planning departments, more robust infrastructure, essentially everything you expect from a thriving modern town.
Right. Services that cost money they currently don't generate locally.
Precisely.
So to take that critical next step towards true full incorporation and offer those services, what does the executive summary state they need to do? How do they get ready for that leap?
The executive summary is quite direct about it. Incorporation readiness absolutely requires revenue diversification. That's priority number one.
Meaning local taxes.
Meaning establishing local tax streams, yes. And probably utility fees as well. But it's not just about money. It also recommends putting formal budgeting processes in place, something they probably haven't needed at their current scale.
Makes sense.
And significantly, enhancing their governance structure. This includes things like establishing a dedicated planning commission to guide growth and adopting a formal strategic growth plan to manage their continued expansion effectively. They need the structure to handle growth, not just the money.
This brings us to what sounds like the most ambitious part of their growth strategy and maybe the central piece for that revenue diversification. The proposal for an indoor event center, or as they seem to refer to it, a dome.
Yeah, the dome.
This sounds like a huge undertaking for a town of Johnson's size, but it's presented as the key, isn't it?
It's certainly a bold move, no question. But the core insight from the sources is that it's not just some whimsical project. While dome might seem, you know, out of left field for a town this size.
A little bit, yeah.
It's actually a highly calculated, multi-pronged attack on their single biggest financial vulnerability. That near total reliance on state funding.
So it's strategic.
Very strategic. The proposal itself, it's adapted from something called a Buck Thomas Dome Build-Out Plan, which sounds like a pre-existing template for these kinds of facilities, so they're not inventing the wheel entirely.
Okay.
And it outlines a significant structure, 500 feet long by 250 feet wide by 75 feet high. That covers a massive 125,000 square foot footprint.
That is truly an enormous space. What are the projected costs for something of that scale? And what kind of infrastructure would it even require?
Well, the capital costs are substantial, as you'd expect, about $2.537 million for the dome structure itself, plus an additional $1.25 million for synthetic turf inside, which they calculated at $10 per square foot.
So nearly $4 million just for the building and the floor.
Roughly, yeah. And then there's the infrastructure. It would require, they estimate, 10 to 12 weeks just for site preparation, grading, utilities, all that. And it needs heavy-duty HVAC systems sized for 2.5 million BTUs and industrial-grade electrical capacity, 480-volt, three-phase power.
So this isn't just a glorified tent. It's a serious facility.
Absolutely. It's designed to be a robust, modern, year-round facility.
Okay, so with all that investment, what's the operational plan? How would this dome actually generate the revenue they so badly need?
The operational model they've outlined is sort of dual-pronged. First, weekday league play, targeting local youth and adult sports, things like baseball, softball, soccer, flag football, keep it busy during the week.
Right, community use.
Community use, exactly. But the crucial element, the real economic driver, according to the plan, is weekend tournament play.
Ah, bringing people in from outside.
Precisely. These regional tournaments are strategically projected to drive significant hospitality spending, hotels, restaurants, shopping. And that's where the broader economic impact really comes in, beyond just the facility itself.
Okay, so it's not just about local sports then. What are the broader strategic benefits they see for this kind of investment for the town of Johnson beyond simply generating direct revenue?
Yeah, what's fascinating here is how multifaceted the projected benefits are. First, as we said, it directly addresses that core issue, revenue diversification. It significantly reduces their reliance on the state gas tax and introduces new local revenue streams, potentially through facility rentals, concessions, maybe even related taxes down the line.
Okay, number one.
Money.
Number one.
Money.
Second, it's designed to be a potent economic catalyst, driving lodging, retail, and dining, not just within Johnson's tiny limits, but potentially benefiting nearby towns too. It leverages a regional economy.
Spreading the impact.
Right. Third, it demonstrates the kind of infrastructure maturity that's often needed for full municipal incorporation. It shows they can handle large-scale development projects. It's a statement piece, in a way.
Like a proof of capability.
Exactly. And finally, it enhances community livability. It provides year-round programming, a much-needed gathering place, activities for residents of all ages. That makes the town more attractive overall.
So revenue, economic catalyst, proof of capability, and community building. Quite a package if it works.
If it works, yes.
Yeah.
Ticks a lot of boxes.
Now, this whole proposal hinges heavily on its projected economic impact. How do the sources break down the potential financial benefit from these tournaments? What kind of numbers are we actually talking about here?
Okay, so the economic impact analysis, it uses insights from a regional economic modeling tool they refer to as the Hidden Valley data set. Sounds a bit mysterious, but presumably it's validated regional data.
Right.
And it models regional tournament profiles based on what's already happening in nearby towns. For example, larger towns like Shawnee and Tecumseh, their tournaments average about 25 teams per event and yield around $55,000 in direct entry fees.
Okay.
Smaller events, like those hosted in nearby Dale and McLeod, typically see maybe 12 to 15 teams and generate around $25,000 in entry fees. So they benchmarks.
Got it. And how does that translate into the broader economic activity? You mentioned hospitality spending. What are the ripple effects beyond just those entry fees?
Yeah, this raises the important question about economic multipliers, right? How does that initial spending echo through the economy? The analysis uses specific spend multipliers based on that data set. Lodging and meals are projected to generate 2 times the entry fees in additional spending. And ancillary spending, think retail, gas, souvenirs, whatever, generates another 0.5 times the entry fees.
Okay, so for every dollar in entry fees, there's another $2.50 spent nearby.
That's a projection, yes. So the direct fees are really just the beginning of the financial chain reaction they're hoping for.
With those multipliers baked in, what are Johnson's first year projections if they actually build this dome and start hosting events?
Okay, for the first year, the projection is pretty ambitious. They aim to host 5 major tournaments and 10 smaller events. Based on those models and multipliers, each major tournament is estimated to bring in a total economic impact of $192,500. Multiply that by 5.
That's nearly $1 million right there.
$962,500.
Yeah.
Then each smaller event is estimated at $87,500 in impact. multiply that by 10.
Another $875,000.
Exactly. So this culminates in an estimated total annual economic impact of a staggering $1.84 million for the first year of operation.
Wow. If those projections hold, that is absolutely a transformative sum for a town the size of Johnson. But, you know, with any ambitious plan like this, there are always potential pitfalls. Did the sources identify any major risks or contingencies? Like, what happens if the tournament numbers don't quite meet expectations, or if construction costs escalate beyond that $4 million estimate?
That's a fair question. The sources we have here, particularly the executive summary, focus very heavily on the upside potential. They emphasize the proven market demand and the strategic alignment with their goals.
So not much on risk mitigation.
Not explicitly detailed in the documents we reviewed, no. But they do outline the long-term potential, suggesting confidence. With an expanded rotation later on, maybe 8 major and 15 smaller events annually, they project the annual economic impact could reach $3.5 to $4 million.
Hmm.
And they base this robust projection on a regional comparison of existing county-level economic activity, suggesting, again, that the demand is fundamentally already there. They just need the facility to capture it.
Right. Speaking of that regional context, how does Pottawatomie County, where Johnson is located, currently compare to other counties in terms of this kind of event impact? Does the data actually support this level of potential growth?
It seems to, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the county-level comparison provided in that data set, Pottawatomie County already ranks third regionally in terms of event volume.
Third, okay.
Yeah, hosting around 420 events annually that generate an estimated $7.4 million in entry fees alone and a total estimated economic impact of $17.8 million.
So there's already a lot happening there.
A lot. This averages out to over $42,000 in economic impact per event currently happening in the county. For comparison, Tulsa County leads the region with maybe 735 events and a $33.1 million estimated impact. So Pottawatomie is a significant player, but there's room to grow compared to the leader.
So the core insight here, the takeaway, is that Johnson isn't necessarily trying to create something entirely from scratch in a vacuum. They're aiming to tap into an existing proven demand for these kinds of facilities and events within its own region.
Exactly. That's the key point. The data suggests that by capturing just 10% to 15% of the existing regional tournament rotations, pulling them into Johnson's new dome, the town could realistically add between $1.8 million and $2.7 million in local economic activity annually.
Which aligns with their projections.
It does. So this makes the dome feel less like a wild gamble and more like a calculated strategic capture of a slice of a proven market.
Wow. This deep dive into the town of Johnson has truly opened my eyes. I mean, from its humble beginnings resisting a landfill through decades of extreme fiscal prudence to this incredibly ambitious vision for the future, it's really a powerful story of a small community strategically planning its next big leap.
It really is. What we've seen, I think, is how a solid, albeit lean, fiscal foundation built over years of careful management combined with strategic infrastructure investment like this proposed indoor event center, and importantly, a keen understanding of validated market demand for events, it provides a clear pathway forward for them.
A pathway not just to becoming a full-service municipality on paper.
Right, not just about a corporation status, but a pathway to sustained economic growth and ultimately a more vibrant community for its residents.
Mm-hmm.
Building a future, really.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? If a small town like Johnson, population under 500, can map out such a detailed and potentially impactful plan for growth and economic diversification, what hidden potential might other overlooked communities hold? You know, places just waiting to be unlocked by the right strategic vision and maybe one bold project.
That's the question, isn't it? What other Johnsons are out there?